Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Today is August 18th. Happy birthday to my kid. And hot and humid today. Highs of 92. More chances for not raining than for actual raining, although we had a heck of a storm last night in Belchase. Then a chance for showers returns on Thursday and Friday. And you know how it's going to be. The system off the coast of Africa, a wave that would be 2 weeks from now if it affected us at all. It has a 50-50 chance of developing. So it's nothing to worry about at all. But just keep in mind that we are watching it, et cetera. Rafael Goyeneche joins us now, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission. How you doing, Rafael?
I'm fine, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. I see a story here. I'm going to quote from it. Sophie Kasikov and James Finn, NOLA.com, interviewing somebody near Lake Pontchartrain. And he said, they quoted this man as saying, a neighborhood activist turned anti-establishment politician, Cantrell once seemed like a breath of fresh air for New Orleans, someone who would speak her mind about problems in the city, whether people wanted to hear it or not. I thought she was a really good person at first, this man says, but with decisions you make, consequences come behind them. And I just wanted to read that because I thought that was a pretty good synopsis. I was one of the first ones to put LaToya Cantrell on the air because a friend of mine, after Katrina, was living in mid-city and knew about the work she was doing. And the LaToya Cantrell of today is not that LaToya Cantrell.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we're finding out the hard way. Mm-hmm. But her problems, you know, her ethics and integrity issues didn't just surface when she became mayor of the city of New Orleans. There were smoke signals when she was on the city council. So on the cusp of her running for her first term as mayor, it was disclosed that she had used the city council credit card to make personal purchases. And when someone was doing, some campaign background investigations, one of the other candidates, they disclosed the fact that she had spent thousands of dollars on travel, made purchases with the city credit card for what appeared to be purely personal expenditures. And just before she qualified, she wrote a check to the city paying back several thousand dollars, indicating that this is just an oversight. And we now seeing that, you know, those were indicators. And once she was elected to office, she had access to more money and more power as mayor than she did as a council person.
So at what point, this is what I wanted to ask you, knowing you were coming on, at what point did the mayor attract the attention? Oh, wait, let me rephrase. At what point did LaToya Cantrell attract the attention of the Metropolitan Crime Commission?
So we started getting information about her when she was on the city council. And what we do, we're a little bit different than the media. So when we get information about ethical, administrative, or criminal wrongdoing, we document it and we send it to what we believe are the appropriate entities. Mm-hmm. So as we start to get information, we don't really talk about it publicly. Now, you know, when the media sniffs it out and they get information, their first recourse is to inform the public. Mm-hmm. I'm a former prosecutor. I recognize the value of the element of surprise. Mm-hmm. So when the investigators and prosecutors are receiving information, they have somewhat of an advantage if the offender or suspect is unaware that someone may be looking into their wrongdoing. That's the reason that we send the information to the appropriate agencies and don't discuss it publicly. But if the media sniffs it out and they come and ask us about it, of course, I'll comment on it because that'll generate more information, both with tips to the media as well as with information to the Crime Commission that we then forward to the appropriate agency.
Your thoughts, you're an attorney on and a former prosecutor on the indictment itself, 44 pages, I think?
Yep. And the first 24 pages of it go into rather explicit detail about the conspiracy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the mayor and Officer Vappi were charged with 17 counts dealing with wire fraud, obstruction, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, conspiracy to commit corruption. Obstruction of justice, and making false statements to the FBI and to a grand jury. So the government hinted at what was to come last fall when Officer Vappi was initially indicted by himself. In that indictment, where it was Vappi by himself, the government made reference in the indictment that they had the cell phone records of Officer Vappi and the mayor. So today we saw, or last Friday, we saw, you know, with great deal of specificity, not all, but a substantial portion of what the government has. They have over 15,000 text messages back and forth between the mayor and Officer Vappi. That's going to be the evidence that they use and the reason that they were indicted. The government not only believes that a crime was committed, they believe they have sufficient proof to obtain a conviction and convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that both Officer Vappi and Mayor Cantrell are guilty of the charges for which they were indicted for.
Let me take a break. We'll talk about encrypted messages when we come back. And you know, people think they're going to get away with stuff, and I'm not. Everybody's innocent until proven guilty.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
But I'm just talking to the general public here. Once you start dealing with the phone or the computer, you might think you got an encrypted app, but when push comes to shove, I don't know that anything can ever be hidden or destroyed unless it's, unless you burn it or something. I don't know. 721 traffic now, WWL. 726 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Monday morning, August 18th, back with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafael, I was talking about the messages, the encrypted stuff that I guess they thought was hidden. If you're going to engage in any kind of conspiracy, if you got an electronic trail, is there any way to really make it disappear?
Look, you're going to have an IT expert on, but obviously whatever they thought they had accomplished, they didn't. So what I do know is that, you know, with any type of digital evidence, even if you attempt to delete it, there's a footprint and there are countermeasures to be able to extract it. A lot of this information is stored in the cloud. For the government to get and open up the phones of Officer Vappi at the time and Mayor Cantrell, they had to have a judge sign a warrant giving them the authority to do that. This isn't just a fishing expedition. So they had to go to a judge and put in the warrant why they were requesting permission to open the phones to investigate what a crime, what they believe were potential, a strong propensity that a crime or crimes had been committed. So there wasn't just the government deciding to go on a fishing expedition. They have to go through the process. So you're talking about the FBI receiving the information, obtaining the phones, going to the United States Attorney's Office, U.S. Attorney's Office, assisting the FBI in the next step, which would be to open up these phones. And that's where really the floodgates opened up. So everything that you're seeing in the indictment, all of this stuff is corroborated not by eyewitnesses or hearsay, but by the communications between Officer Vapi and Mayor Cantrell. And that's pretty compelling evidence.
So when it comes to the adage, I don't know if it's true or not, a wife can't be compelled to testify against her husband. I don't know if that's true. These two are not married. They're in a relationship. Can they be forced to testify against each other, or they can take the
Fifth
Amendment?
Of course not. They're both defendants.
Okay.
So they do not have
Raphael, I'm not a lawyer. No.
Oh, I know. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. So, you know, they're
I'm
the
just
accused.
Kidding.
The government has the burden of proof in all of this. If they elect to take the stand and defend themselves, then they open themselves up to cross-examination.
When it comes to that's right. I forgot. I should have known that. When it comes to the likelihood of bargaining this down, from what you've seen, is the case pretty, as far as you know, so tight that the government's got no interest in bargaining anything down?
No. So look, you know, 99% of all of the criminal cases are resolved with a guilty plea. Mm. So there's always going to be negotiations and discussions about, well, if you elect to plead guilty, the government or the prosecution will reduce some of the charges. But that's typical in every case. This is no different. The mayor and Officer Vapi have a decision to make. You know, they can either enter into a plea agreement, which usually suggests that their penalties will be lesser, or they can elect to go to trial and then that puts it strictly in the hands of the judge to decide, after hearing all of the facts, what the appropriate sentence would be.
Thank you, Raphael. Appreciate it as always. Raphael Goyeneche, we all saw this coming, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. And much like Ray Nagin, you know, a lot of times you think you're going to feel good when this finally happens. And I don't feel good. I think it's embarrassing for the city and embarrassing for everybody. And I wish it had never happened. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Bank on it. We'll talk about credit cards and more. Right now it's time for WWL First News. For that, we'll go to Dave Cohen. Here we go. 7:45. Time for Bank on It. Financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. How you doing, Jason?
Doing good, Tommy. How are you?
I'm all right. How was your weekend?
Pretty good. Sorry to hear about your lawnmower.
Yeah, also I tried to hit some golf balls, and with my hands and the wrist, I can't even do that. So, but I'm going to get it looked at. We'll be all right. Tell me about credit scores and everything and what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, so credit scores, while they're on a very exciting topic, I think this headline is unfortunately exciting for the wrong reasons, and that's, according to Equifax, Louisiana has the 49th worst average credit score in the country.
At least it's not 50.
No, it's not 50. That belongs to our friends over in Mississippi,
there,
unfortunately.
Again, a race to the bottom.
So our average credit score is a 680. And while some people may say, hey, that sounds really good, you have to consider that's the average. That's not the top or the bottom. And so really what I want to talk about today is just credit scores and what folks can do to actually monitor them and stay on top of them. So the first thing I want to talk about is what a credit score even is, right? Because a lot of people know, everyone knows what their credit score is, but they don't know what it actually means. And in essence, it's a numerical representation of how likely your loan is to go bad to the person who's lending you money. And so 680 is, we'll use 800 because that seems to be the standard. So we'll just compare an 800 credit score to, say, someone who has a 700.
Okay.
And what happens with these points is every 20 points, your odds of the loan being bad double. So
really?
A 700 credit score, yeah,
wow.
And it's an exponential thing. And so that's another thing a lot of people don't think about, right, is, hey, I'm only 50 points away from your credit score. That's not really that bad. But when you consider the exponential nature of it, it's actually really bad because you're 2.5 times likely to be bad. So a representation that I always show folks that's kind of a scary one to think about is, we use an 800 credit score as a basis. A person with a 700 credit score is 35 more times likely to go bad than an 800 credit score. And, okay, that's not that bad. When you look at a 600 credit score, mm-hmm. they're 1,000 times more likely to go bad. So once you get out of that 700 range, you can see why it becomes harder and harder for people to get credit. And
you know what I think is fascinating about this is looking at it from your angle, because we do shows on credit scores and people always worry about their credit. But you're looking at it from the lender's side, and that's amazing. If you have a credit score of 600, you are 100 times more likely to default on a loan. That's what I'm hearing.
1,000 more 1,000 times likely
times.
Than an 800, than an 800
off,
credit score.
I left a zero off on my notes. Sorry about that, Jason.
Yeah. And you know, history has proven these numbers to be correct, Tommy. Mm-hmm. That's the unfortunate thing. And it's important for everyone to kind of understand what these impacts may be. And so the obvious things, right? Make payments on time. Make sure your balances are low. But some other shocking numbers that I think everyone should know is – Why is it that Louisiana struggles? And a key metric that they use to measure credit quality is what's your mortgage defaults over 90 days in your state? Mississippi and Louisiana are both tied at 2% of their mortgage loans being 90% more delinquent. The next closest state is Alabama at 1.5%. And when you consider that from a statistical standpoint, that's crazy. The national average is about 1%. Mm. So it's... You can also, this factors into a lot of things in life, right? Insurance considers risk. Not a lot of people realize that insurance is not just storm risk, it's also credit risk. How worthy are people for credit? And so these are all things that will impact people's ability to get insurance. And ultimately, it's just going to cost you a lot of money over the duration of if you were to borrow money or anything that you do. So I wanted to talk a little bit about credit scores, because credit scores today aren't really the same as they were, say, 10 years ago, right? The old rules were, you know, if you were going to do a mortgage, you paid all your credit cards down, you made sure you didn't have any delinquencies, and the minute they pulled your credit, you had a really good number. That was really easy. Now, credit companies got pretty wise to that over the years, and so what they use now is what they call trended data. Mm-hmm. And so your credit score is actually a compilation of the past 24 months of life for you from a credit standpoint. Mm-hmm. So if you paid all of your credit cards down right before you went to get a loan, it's not going to have an impact on your score like it used to back in the day, simply because it goes back and looks at 24 months. So what I want people to know from this is there's no quick and easy fix to credit scores. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's just like a workout routine or anything else that just takes time. Training, you have to do it over time nowadays. And that starts with monitoring, really. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people who I talk to about this get turned off by the fact that, oh, well, I have to go buy one of those really expensive credit freezing or monitoring programs. And the reality is, yes, they have great advertising and they tell you that, but everything you need to do to monitor credit score, you can do for free. So the first and most important thing, if no one else listening takes anything from this conversation, is to go freeze your credit, okay? Mm-hmm. It takes a few minutes. You go to the three reporting agencies, and you freeze your credit. That's going to stop the most frequent thing that causes people's scores to suffer, other than not paying your bills, which mm-hmm. is fraud, mm-hmm. which has run rampant lately. Mm. And, you know, a few years back, Equifax's systems were breached, right? That means all of our personal info is out there. So unfortunately, we have no choice but to lock these things down. As a percentage, you would be amazed how many people have not locked their credit. So
I haven't.
That's the first.
I have it. My hand's up. I should, but I haven't.
You should. You should. It doesn't take that long. Okay. And I can tell you some horror stories of people who've had their identity stolen. The amount of paperwork and time it takes to fix it is horrible. And so the other thing is to just simply monitor your score. Now, there's two ways you can do that. By law, everyone's allowed to get a free copy of their credit report data for free on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. So there's a website out there, annualcreditreport.com. You go out there and you just pull it. Now, first thing you always want to do is make sure that data is right, because there might be old trade lines that haven't closed. There may be data out there that maybe you disagree with. And so once you go out there and you take a look at that, the second most important thing you need to do is, if there's anything that's erroneous or that you don't agree with, is to dispute it. There's an entire process that creditors like me have to go through where if someone claims that the data that we report to a credit agency is erroneous in any way, that we have to verify it and let the credit prove it to the actual credit reporting agencies. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you over time the people I've told to do this that have found plenty of things wrong with their credit, either old cards that didn't close that were hurting their credit score or things that were open that they didn't know about. Another common thing is if you have a similar name, a junior and a senior or a third, sometimes your parents' credit may get reported on your credit report. So
could be a good thing, could be a bad thing.
To do that,
right?
Yeah, it could be, right.
You're rolling the dice on that one. Let me ask you real quick, Justin, before we, Jason rather, before we let you go, and that is, so with as the odds increase of you not paying it off because of the credit score, do you offset that with a higher interest rate, or is credit just not available for people?
No, it is. So to some extent, yes, you do a risk-adjusted a change to the interest rate, right? You're going to pay higher interest. But at some point, you do fall off that cliff where the risk is so high there's no amount of interest that could offset it. But so great question, and I can give
– go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say an example. I just pulled an auto loan, right, off LendingTree to use as an example recently, and it compared an excellent credit versus what we would call a good credit. And the difference was about $115 a month in payment, or about $6,500 over the duration of that loan.
So when they say 0% financing for qualified buyers, that means you got to have a good credit rating.
If you ever listen, it says well-qualified buyers.
Well-qualified.
They always put that in there.
So
they're usually looking for a pretty high number.
At what number? Is there a number where people should not even look to even attempt to get credit? Unless they're seeing Looney the Neck in an alley?
If you're in the 600s, low 600s, I would suggest working on your credit before borrowing, if at all humanly possible, because the unfortunate truth is anyone who's going to give you credit that low, you're usually going to pay for it. And so it's cheaper to just save up that cash if at all possible, if it's not an immediate need, and then get your score where it needs to be and pay less for it.
If you're in the 500s, don't waste everybody's time.
You're not going to like your rate.
Okay. You do better with Nooney to the Neck in the alley. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate your time. Very valuable information. That's Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Bank on it. Financial insights you can count on. With Jason Shields. We'll take a break, come back, 7:55, traffic now, WWL.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.